Well, hey, welcome everybody. This is Dave. It's great to be back together. I love our reunions, and I appreciate all the feedback that you've given about what's most helpful and the kind of things you'd like to see and do. So let's start. We have a couple of really neat presentations, outstanding presentations today that I'm very excited about. And first, let's do wins, check-ins, and then a segment of anything you want to present to our group to sort of mastermind feedback. So what you got? Who's here? I see a bunch of you here. You want to check in and share with our group what you're up to?
This is Mahama.
Hi, David.
I heard Mahama first. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying hello to the whole group. I'm not going to share anything.
Tell us a sentence about where you are and what you're doing.
Yes, so I'm based in the Bay Area in Palo Alto, and I help tech executives with communication skills and personal effectiveness. That's what I do.
Super. Thank you very much. That's great. Did I hear Lisa?
Kristen,
go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Great.
Hello to the group.
You?
I'm doing well. Got a lot going on. Still doing my wellness coaching and things like that on the side, along with one hair, and just recently applied with Summit Salon Consultants to be a coach directly with them to combine my 26 years of doing hair with coaching. So I'm about the fourth point of the interview process, just waiting to hear back. So that's been pretty exciting.
Terrific.
Yeah, other than that, just still doing coaching on the side with doing hair and enjoying every minute of it.
Well, great. Congratulations. I love to hear what you guys are up to. Mahama, would you just do another sentence or two about what you're doing with execs at the technical firms where you are and the kind of training and coaching you're doing?
Yes. Sure. I gave a very short version. So basically, the companies that I work with bring me on for what they call leadership coaching, and that involves coaching around burnout prevention, around how to turn everyday conversations into meaningful outcomes, around emotional resilience. So those are some of the things that they've been asking me to do, and these days I'm also helping them to do team bonding activities so that the team can be more effective as a unit. That's basically what I've been working on. I'm looking to add other elements to what I'm doing and just figuring it out as I go.
Terrific. Thank you.
Dave?
And to follow up,
Dave?
Kristen.
Hello?
Yes.
Dave,
I'm sorry.
I need to apologize because I got an email, and I'm not sure I'm in the right class. This is Carolyn, but I got an email saying that we had been rescheduled for today at 1. So which class is this? Because I've got many going.
Okay, this is not a class. This is a quarterly mentor group of the coaches who are licensed and specialty certified in wellness and financial coaches. So I think you did get a, but you wouldn't have
I
gotten
did sign
this
up.
Number.
I signed
that.
Up. But, yeah, I got it from the email. It was an email
okay.
I got.
Okay, well, I invited everyone who had just recently signed up, so you'll get a taste of what it's like for the mentor group. So you're in the right place. It's a quarterly
Oh,
mentor.
Good.
So you're way
Do we also have our meeting tonight? Do we also have a meeting tonight as well?
We do.
Yes, okay.
And that's also for everyone in the mentor group as a kind of a bonus of the teleconference. And
okay.
We are too into that. And this is on change and transition.
Okay.
You know,
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't lost.
Yeah, great. This specific
All right, thank
is,
you.
Is those of you who have seen a successful navigation of change and transition mind-brain behavior strategies. So that's recorded on the same link that I sent each of you. So following on the on Kristen's note about wellness coaching, this is an announcement I have. I want to be sure and add it, that our graduates of the New Life Story Wellness Training who have who want to set for the HWC, National Board of Health and Wellness Coaches, exam have to sit for that exam by February 2021. After that time, they require a totally different and expanded program to qualify that includes a minimum of 75 hours of classroom or seminar time. I will not be applying for that accreditation, but you or anyone who you refer who completes the training will have until 1 year from now to set for that exam. It has to be by February 2021. So our program is grandfathered, and I will not be expanding for that new program. So that still leaves a year for you to set for the exam or for anybody who you refer, and I mentioned that in a recent email about the referral fee for that. So just to be aware of that, if you want any other information about sitting for the exam, email me, but I'll also send out a reminder as a follow-up for this group so that you'll be up to date on that and can plan for that if you want to sit for that exam, because we're one of the few programs nationally now that are accredited for sitting for that exam. Any questions about that? Was that too succinct to be clear, or does that make enough sense that you're good for now? Well, let's get back to checking in. Who else is here with wins or progress notes? What you got?
Hi, Dave. It's Carlene here.
Welcome.
I'm calling from Edmonton, Canada.
Yeah.
And,
tell us your full name and your coaching firm or what you do in coaching so people will get to know you.
Sure. I'm Carlene Ellis. My business name is Heart Centered Life. And I know that sounds a little bit maybe different than what people here are expecting, but my background is actually in neuropsychology, and I'm a writer, a yoga teacher, and a meditation teacher, and I like to work in the area of story mind and using those modalities to, I guess, unravel or let go of limiting stories that people tell themselves. And I've been focusing on the completion of two books, and one of them I'm hoping to have published in the next couple of months. So that's where my time has been, at the same time as teaching and coaching and mentoring. So,
well, you're definitely at the right place. Thanks for that. And just as a reminder, any of you who have anything, any announcement of projects or services that you are newly offering or publications, send me the name and a link, or maybe also a brief description, and I'll send them around to the group when I send out the link for the recording of this session. So be sure and do that. And this session is recorded. There are a number of people who had commitments in different directions, and it's recorded so that everyone can benefit and hear who aren't here right now. And thanks to all of you who came. I see a large number of people, and that's great. Other wins, progress notes, announcements? What about any questions that you have that you'd like to bring to our group as a kind of a mastermind group that we can all log in on if we have something to offer or add or ask? Anybody want to present any kind of challenges or questions to the group for have you heard or seen or done that, or what would you do if? None today? Last call? Did I short circuit the check-ins and progress notes too quickly? Anybody else want to say hi, check in, or make any announcements of anything?
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dr.
Wendy Cook.
I heard Randy, and we'll come back to go ahead, Randy.
All right. This will be real quick, just to let you know that my company, MyMDCoaches.com, is the company is MyMDCoaches, but the website is MyMDCoaches.com, is continuing to develop. We have not hired a single client yet, but our website, MyMDCoaches.com, is attracting a good bit of interest, primarily because of the blog that we've published, and my podcast, Prescription for Success, has also been released. Our fourth podcast guest was released today. So we're happy with our progress, and we hope we'll be getting some clients pretty soon.
Thanks very much. And just to expand that a bit, Randy is a retired doc, and it's my MD, as in medical doctor, coaches.com for any referrals. Do you want to say anything more, just another sentence or two, Randy, about what kind of services you're providing and what kind of ways you're providing that? Because I think you got an interesting model.
Yeah, we think that we're unique and that we're the only company that we know of that is focused primarily on helping physicians develop their career, particularly those physicians that would like to move into leadership positions. Those types of skills are something that are just absolutely not learned either in medical school or in postgraduate training, and we hope to be the source for exactly that kind of mentorship.
Terrific. I think your hope and your plan has come true. You're it as far as I know. Thank you very much for that, and that's great. Congratulations on the progress. Every time it's some more major steps. Someone else spoke at the same time as Randy, and I didn't recognize your voice or hear who it was.
Hey, Dr. Dave, it's me, Rosemary Goodlow from Toronto,
Canada. Hey, Rosemary, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Are you holding down the Canadian front okay?
I am. I've been working over the last year pretty much with my son's company. Two of my sons have a digital agency, and I've been coaching their team, helping them up-level their skills, their momentum moving forward, and they've now asked me to also start coaching their clients as well. But I still have my private coaching. Then my website could be found at rosemarygoodlow.com. I've launched a whole new website. I'm pretty proud of it, so if anybody wants to take a look, and feedback is always welcome.
Would you spell it for us?
rosemarygoodlow.com.
And Rosemary has a terrific amount of experience of working with executives and executive teams, so keep that in mind. Thank you very much for adding that, and it's great to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you. That's great to be here.
Super.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Hi, Dave. This is Kristen again.
Part
of what led up to seeking the Summit Salon Consultants is I took over coaching all of our junior stylists at the salon just because I saw a lot of inconsistencies and I saw them struggling. And since then, they've all tripled their income and tripled their client base. So that was kind of what led up to going into Summit, because we're at Summit Salon to begin with. So that's kind of what led up to that. Just saw a need for it, and so that's where that ended up. I just forgot to add that in earlier. So.
Those are really significant metrics. Those are huge successes, and a way that you can, if there's a way you can elegantly and non-salesy emphasize that, it can really add to the possibilities of people signing on and moving laterally to other groups and other systems that that kind of success is, I would buy, if you were a stock, I'd buy you. So
Thank you.
That sounds great.
Thank you.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Who else? Anyone want to just say hi? I know you guys are out there. I see you on the dashboard. if there's nothing else, final call for wins and progress notes and announcements, and for any kind of mastermind questions that you want to put to the group and ask for advice about from our group, that we have a wealth of information here and experience. Anyone for any of that? Well, let's move into our discussion. And we've allotted 15 minutes for each, but if you go over a bit, you can plan that from the beginning to go to 20, since it's question and answer. So jot down any questions or comments you have about the two presentations, because I'm very excited about them. From the titles, it looks like I really planned this thing instead of just calling up a couple of favorite people and ask if they would do a gig on the mentor group. Our first presenter, Shelley Barden-Till, is a coach, an athlete, and a huge voice in the athletic community. Shelley focuses on powerful messages, including vision, tenacity, strength, self-love, and performance. She addresses strategies for excellence in athletes, leaders, and in life coaching. Her emphasis on connection and transitional leadership has inspired people to overcome challenges, to enhance their beliefs, and ultimately develop resiliency to achieve desired behaviors that promote success. I've recently seen her present to a group of athletic coaches at a Duke conference, and she is amazing. She's an ACC life coach and a New Life Story Wellness coach, and she's going to talk to us about innovations in coaching for resilience and performance. Shelley, welcome, thank you, and take it away.
Well, hello, thank you. I just want to make sure that you can hear me. Okay.
Totally, it's great.
Okay, wonderful. First of all, I want to say thank you to you, Dave, for inviting me to share. It's a great honor. I have learned so much from you, and so just to be here and to be on this call with all of you professionals and people who have worked with you, Dave, I feel very honored. So thank you for making the time for me to share.
It's a privilege.
As Dave mentioned, my background is largely involved in the athletic arena. And I should note also, in addition to that work, I also work with an organization. I live in the state of Iowa, and I work with an organization called Women Lead Change, where I act as the leadership development coach. And our mission with the organization is the advancement, promotion, and development of women into leadership positions. And so I get to do this type of work with emerging leaders in the corporate setting. So it's very, very rewarding to be able to marry two of my passions, athletics and what I've learned in terms of leadership there, along with empowering and inspiring women into leadership positions. So the title, as you saw in the email that Dave sent out, is Innovations in Coaching for Resilience and Performance. And when I say the word innovations, innovation obviously means something new. This may or may not be new to you. It was new to me, and it was absolutely life-changing for me. And I knew that I was on to something. As Dave mentioned, I did this presentation to a group of athletic coaches fairly recently at Duke University. And to be honest, went into it with a lot of reservation as to how well it was going to be received, because every coaching conference I've ever been to, the stuff I was talking about has never been brought up. And I can say at the end of that conference, it was not only well received, I think several of the participants, as they told me in their own words, were blown away. So I knew I was onto something. So I want to start by just talking about the word resilience, and very simply the definition of resilient, the first one, is being able to become strong, healthy, or successful again after something bad happens. And as you may or may not know or can imagine, there is a strong correlation between resilience and performance. And a lot of what I talk about is, as I mentioned, from the athletic world, but it certainly applies to anyone who is trying to perform in their job, in their life, in any type of activity that we all have. So when you're talking about resilience in athletics, a lot of times it's developing mental toughness. And that's going to help the athlete perform well in the face of adversity. A resilient athlete is someone who is able to overcome setbacks, remain confident, and focus on the present. So the real question is, how can an athlete become resilient? Well, the most apparent method actually isn't really an easy one, because an athlete must face and conquer adversity in order to successfully cope with it in the future. The saying, you've heard it, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, applies perfectly to an athlete that's coming off of a bad performance. Past mastery experiences can boost self-confidence, and that leads to greater performance. So an effective tool that an athlete can use in a practice or a game setting is a trigger. And a trigger is like a trigger word or an action that helps an athlete refocus or clear his or her mind quickly. Sidebar on this, I have a story. My son-in-law is an NFL football player. He plays for the San Francisco 49ers. He's the tight end. If any of you are 49er fans, his name is George Kittle. He's in his third year at the NFL and has last year set the record in just his second year for his position in total yards and made it to the Pro Bowl. Needless to say, he's experienced great success early in his career. One of the many things that he does from a mental standpoint is uses a trigger. And he has a tattoo on his forearm of the Heath Ledger Joker, which I'm going to let you Google that. You can look up the story. But basically the premise behind it is he uses that to reset himself. So during a game, you may see him tap his forearm or hit a button on his wrist. That's a trigger for him to move on from the past play, whether it was a positive or a negative outcome for him. But when we talk about what's separating one person from another in terms of their ability to overcome adversity, triggers, just like they help an athlete to refocus or clear his or her mind, triggers can also impede a person's level of resilience. And before I get into how that works, I think it's relevant for me to share a little bit, just briefly, of the history of what I came up in terms of how I developed resiliency. But it wasn't an easy thing. When I was very young, I was the oldest of three children. And I'm not going to get into a lot of the details, but I had a very volatile childhood. Although it started out as the oldest of three children, my father was my superhero at a very young age. He was the guy that I just remember looking up to as kind of my protector. But as I got older, I realized that, unbeknownst to me, I knew it, no, looking back now, but my father is a Vietnam veteran, and so he struggled with substance abuse, namely alcoholism. But to me, that was my normal. So my environment growing up was very chaotic. And it came to a head for me when I was around 9 or 10 years old, when one night I heard my parents fighting through the bedroom walls. And it was louder than normal. And so that prompted me to go to their room and just very gently, sneakily open the door, where I saw my father standing over my mother with his hand raised, just about to hit her. And I remember, I can still see it very vividly, and so I screamed, "Stop!" And, of course, startled both of them. They turned, looked at me with faces of horror, and I remember turning and just running back to my bedroom, jumping on my bed, sitting on top of it, and pulling my knees into my chest and just hugging myself, because I was at that time probably scared to death of what I saw, because here was this man who up until then I thought was my protector, and he turned into a dangerous person. And so I tell you that, and you're going to understand as we go on, because that experience got lodged into my nervous system, unbeknownst to me. So moving on, I just continued to age into an environment that was very unstable. It included, as I mentioned, alcoholism, job loss. My parents struggled with money all the time. And basically, I had to learn at a very young age to fend for myself and not rely on anyone else. Until I became a teenager and I found sports. Sports for me was a lifesaver, because not only was it physically good in terms of stress release and development, but more importantly, it was the first place that provided a safe and supportive environment for me through the coaches that I had. So much so that I excelled to the point where I earned a college scholarship to play basketball at the Division I level. I was the first person in my family, either male father or mother's side, to not only go to college but graduate. So that leads me to the concept of, you may or may not have heard of a concept called transitional characters. And what a transitional character is one who in a single generation can change the entire course of a lineage. And the changes might be for good or bad, but they refuse to settle for repeating history. They break the mold. Their contribution to humanity is to filter the destructiveness out of their own lineage so that the generations downstream will have a safe and supportive foundation upon which to build productive lives. So I took that concept of transitional character and just changed the last word to transitional coach, because for me, it took transitional coaches to change the trajectory of my life. And this is how it applies to coaching and to what I was speaking with to these coaches at Duke University and continue to do so. It's a type of safe, connected support that is the foundation of building resilience. There is no resilience without connection. Connection requires a relationship and a purpose that's greater than ourselves. It's why you hear championship teams after they win the Super Bowl or after they win the World Series or the NCAA tournament say, I love my teammates. I love these guys. I love these women. They feel a bond like no other. It's also true in the military. You hear several people that have been in the military and they talk about the band of brothers. There's that camaraderie that is just indescribable unless you're in it. And that is that safe connection. And that type of connection was what helped me build my own grit muscle, as I call it, and ultimately helped me fulfill the dream of playing college basketball. But it didn't, unfortunately, continue on a good path there. And without getting into a whole lot of detail, I thought my Division I dream come true was meant I was on a path to continued success. But unfortunately, I couldn't take those safe, supportive coaches with me. And over the next 2 to 3 years, my happy little world got turned upside down. Things like my freshman year, where I had a former high school administrator visit me out of town and take me out to lunch, but ended up in his hotel room and had to ward off sexual advances. Where I tore my MCL in my freshman year and was isolated from the rest of the team while I was going through rehab. Where we got beat by 25 points on the road and met the rage of our coaching staff, who decided to take it out on the team by making us run 25 suicides to the point where one of my teammates urinated all over herself. So as you can imagine, the depression and the fear-based environment for me was overwhelming. And other things continued to go on, but again, in the interest of time, I'll just move on to let you know that it got so bad that for me, I could no longer put myself in the position of playing college basketball because I felt so unsafe in that environment that I literally could not overcome all of the stimulus that was going on in my body to the point where I just had to run away from it. My fight or flight kicked in on high drive. And so I quit. I gave up my childhood dream of playing college basketball. And then I went into a shame spiral. I couldn't explain why I quit. I couldn't explain why I couldn't go back into that environment. I couldn't put words to what I was feeling. I just knew that was what was going on hurt bad, hurt really bad. And it just felt like shame because I couldn't talk to my parents. I couldn't rely on anyone. And I couldn't, like I said, I just couldn't explain it. So the shame was just a constant humming in my nervous system, and it impacted me for a very, very long time. And how it impacted me was by this feeling of not being good enough, not putting myself out there, not believing I was good enough for any job or career or life that I desired, because people that I cared and trusted in my college days and that I thought were safe told me that I was a loser, that I would never amount to anything, and that I would just be a failure the rest of my life. So just like anything in our lives, little things taken in isolation don't really make that big of an impact. But because of the accumulation of traumatic events and a toxic coach that I had caused my emotional injury bucket to overflow. And that put me on constant high alert and protection mode. And as someone who studied psychology and always wanted to be a sports psychologist and just loved the mental side of the game, it was torture because I could not talk myself out of or mantra myself into thinking or feeling better. I did everything. I did the mantras. I read the books. I tried all the tactical things that we all know and love and read about. But I just couldn't get over it. And then in the athletic arena, it's very common to hear things like, you need to toughen up, suck it up, get over it. Or my favorite, kids are just soft today. We hear these things over and over and over. And that was me. And I beat myself up over it for years because I just couldn't figure out why I felt so crappy. And then I discovered that we've missed kind of the first rung of what I call the resilience ladder. You know, if you want to change a behavior, you got to get to the feeling. And underneath the feeling is an attitude. And underneath the attitude is that belief system. And I always thought, well, it just starts with beliefs. You know, change your thoughts, change your life. That's what everybody told me worked. But what I didn't realize is that there was another rung to that ladder, which is your original injury. And in fact, science shows us that your history plus your environment equals your behavior. So we spend so much time with the care and prevention of physical injuries in athletics, but there's something even more impactful on performance. And that's called what I refer to as emotional injury. Some people call it trauma. Some people call it adverse events. For consistency, I like to refer to it as emotional injury. And just like a physical injury, everybody experiences the impact differently. Some people are bruised. Some people are sprained. Some people can experience a tear, and some people experience that impact as a break. Everyone has a unique experience to trauma, to emotional injury. So I don't want to get confused with trauma, because a lot of times people talk about trauma and just think, oh, it's military PTSD, or you have to be raped to have that kind of trauma. And that's what I thought for so long. But in fact, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's just limited to that. So what does an emotional injury look like? Well, here are just some examples of hidden trauma symptoms. Anxiety, depression, PTSD, insomnia, shame, anger, fear, hypervigilance or perfectionism, procrastination, or the inability to achieve goals, bullying, impaired capacity for self-protection, feeling like you're worthless or ineffective, lack of trust and reciprocity in relationships, oppositional defiant disorder, and on. I could go on and on with the different symptoms of hidden trauma. And some of you, I'm sure, have heard by now of the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Events study. I have information on this. In the interest of time, I don't want to go into it too much, but there's actually obviously been studies on the relationship of childhood abuse and household dysfunction, and they've actually did this study as it leads to the causes of death in adults. And what I can tell you about that is ACEs asked 10 questions that are divided into three areas, which are household dysfunction, abuse, and neglect. You get 1 point for each type of trauma. The higher your ACE score, the higher your risk of health and social problems. Now, of course, there are other adverse events that we can all experience, but you get the idea. The more adverse events you have, the higher your score. And what they found was 2/3 of the people studied, and this was a study of over 17,000 people, which has been replicated and found to be statistically consistent in other studies. But 2/3 of the people have at least one adverse childhood event. 1 in 8 have 4 or more. With an ACE score of 4 or more, things start getting serious. The likelihood of chronic pulmonary lung disease increases 390%, depression 460%, and attempted suicide is 1,220%. So it's very statistically significant, and the downstream effects of adverse events in childhood, trauma, emotional injury, cost billions of dollars to our healthcare system. So what I found out after doing this research was that what was going on inside my body wasn't, the reason I couldn't talk myself out of it is because it wasn't just a physiological response. It was actually just a psychological response. It was also physiological. And that's when I discovered a thing called the polyvagal theory. Polyvagal theory was born in 1969 by Dr. Stephen Porges. I'd encourage you to look him up for more information on it. But it basically has a three-pronged approach. The first part of polyvagal is what is referred to as neuroception, and that's your internal Navy SEAL. It's when you walk into a room, your nervous system is automatically surveying the room for cues of danger. We were built to protect ourselves. It's the innate fight or flight. You're running from the saber-toothed tiger. And that is how we are brilliantly and perfectly made. So your nervous system will always default and work to protect you. So learning this for me changed everything, because this awareness of knowing that I was made like this, that I was made to protect myself, absolutely took that awareness led to shame reduction. And that's what has been found actually across the board in the studies to back that up, that awareness leads to shame reduction. The second part of the polyvagal theory is what is referred to as hierarchy. And that's where our autonomic nervous system comes into play. And you heard me talk about fight or flight. Everybody, I think, is fairly familiar with that sympathetic part of our nervous system. But there are some other parts to that. And so if you think of it like a stop sign, the green light, the yellow light, the red light, at the top of that ladder is where we want to be. And that's what's referred to, we're talking about the vagal nerve system, which is the parasympathetic. This is part of Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory. There's your ventral vagal and your dorsal vagal. Here at the top of that ladder is the ventral vagal status or rung on the ladder. That's where we are socially engaged. We feel safe, calm, connected. That's where we're in our greatest flow. That's where everybody wants to live the majority of their days and hours. In the middle is sympathetic, and that's where your fight or flight response sits. And then at the very bottom is the most primitive response, and that is our freeze, the fight, flight, or freeze response. That's when your nervous system feels most in danger, when you can't fight, when you cannot run, and you immobilize or you shut down, you check out, and you isolate yourself. So red is stopping and shutting down. What determines what direction you go are the glimmers and the triggers. And those triggers and glimmers, I refer to them as the you could also call it rupture and reciprocity. Those glimmers and triggers are rooted in our history. My earlier experiences, I had a lot of triggers. I had a lot of ruptures that caused my neuroception, that caused my nervous system to be on high alert. So anything that felt like I was going back to those days put me on alert to shut down or to get the hell out of there. So once I learned this, it was like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. I was able to go from feeling shame to feeling actually proud of myself for the way my body was able to protect and withstand blow after blow without quitting. I didn't realize it, but I was building my grip muscle and learning how to thrive. I just needed to attach the proper meaning to what was happening to be able to interpret it, to determine if a stimulus was really a trigger or a glimmer or nothing at all. And I can't tell you how liberating it is and how applicable it is to any relationship. Imagine the impact on coaching, parenting, family relationships, romantic relationships, or any relationship that you want to improve connection. And the beauty of it is that those habits and behaviors can be changed, and that's where neuroplasticity comes in. And that's how you can advance and change the default lens that we look into. Resilience research shows that appropriate integration of resilience factors such as asking for help, developing trusting relationships, forming a positive attitude, all of that can help improve lives. And the third and final part of polyvagal is co-regulation. And it is proven over and over again that it only takes one person to authentically create a safe environment of connection to change the trajectory of another person's life. So,
Kelly, I'm
to repair
so
emotional
to injury. Interrupt, but could you summarize within a minute or so that you can have a
Yep, this is my last one. Yep,
answer.
I'm all
okay,
done.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this is it. No worries. To repair emotional injury and build connection, you have to have co-regulation. It's imperative for our survival, and it builds the foundation for resilience. So think of it this way. The desired rate of repair to rupture is 5-to-1 minimum. Minimum. Just to overcome one rupture, you have to have 5 positive interactions. In a married couple, it's 20-to-1. I often joke this is why I'm divorced. Just kidding. But the point of all of this is that our relationships are so important, and they have plenty of reciprocal moments. And so to build resilience, it begins with the impact of connection. Resilience, you cannot change the way you think until you understand what is going on and how your nervous system is responding to the environment around you. And the one thing that can help change the trajectory and overcome emotional injury and help build resilience and improve performance is safe connection. So obviously I could go on and on about this, but in the interest of time, I'm happy to take any questions or comments. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Shelley, for a powerfully articulate and informed message. Inspirational. Any quick questions or comments to Shelley?
Shelley, hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, Shelley. First of all, thank you so much. What a beautiful story. I mean, I know there are parts of it that probably didn't sound beautiful to you, but you just told it so beautifully. It was really a great story. And
thank you
for really taking the time to do that. This is great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I didn't own that story for a long time. I didn't think it was so beautiful, but now I understand that it really is.
Right, and that's why it's beautiful, because you now own it and you can tell when you talk about it.
As we know, when we own our stories, we get to write the rest of it and the ending. So this is a great example. Any other questions or comments?
Hi,
Shelley. This is Kristen.
Yes. Hi, Kristen.
I just wanted to say thank you for sharing your story. It definitely resonates with my story as well. I think it's very powerful when we're able to really express the depth of our stories and recognizing that we can change those patterns. I came from alcoholism and a lot of loss in my family. well. So it's definitely something that I feel like sharing our stories can really reach out to a lot of people and to change that path and to change the next generation. And I am greatly appreciative of you sharing that story today. It was amazing. You're a very powerful woman.
Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate that.
One more quick question and quick answer from someone else who spoke. I didn't hear who it was.
Yeah, hi. This is Mahama. I was just going to commend Shelley for a powerful presentation. I really like the depth that you went into, and I'm really touched. I would like to follow up on some of the information that you have, but for now, I think I'll just say thank you for what you did.
I included Shelley's email in the announcement note for any questions or referrals or speaking engagement requests. I'm going to be applying to be her agent, but I think I have to take it. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's great. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Okay, super. Ace Wagner is an executive mentor coach and founder of Ace Wagner Coaching and Consulting. His emphasis challenges resistance and fosters new energy and transformation for individuals and organizations. He's a trained facilitator of the HeartMath Institute's Resilience Program, the Arbinger Institute, and is a licensed specialty certified New Life Story Coach and Money Story Mentor. Specifically, ACE works with clients in a multidisciplinary approach fostering change management by incorporating neuroscience, heart-focused resilience, and principles of quantum physics. As a business owner, board member, and significant employer for over three decades, ACE's business acumen and experiences are integral to the coaching and consulting practice. He'll talk to us about resilience, the resilience advantage, skills for personal and professional effectiveness. Take it away, Ace, and thanks.
David.
Go for it. We hear you.
Okay, thank you. You cannot be Shelley's agent. You are my agent. After that nice breeze and introduction. Shelley, thank you for your story. An awful lot of overlap in the two presentations today, so I'm grateful to have heard your story. This isn't so much my story, but me relating what I have learned from an outfit called the HeartMath Institute. And HeartMath, I hope you all, the presentation was forwarded to you, and I'm not working from notes. I'm just working from the presentation. And so from time to time, I'll try to simply let you know what page I'm looking at so you can join if you want to. But you don't have to have this presentation, I hope, to understand the intent. Interesting that the word resilience is being bantered around a good deal today, and I submit that that resilience is an inside job. And the HeartMath Institute is intending to help us, each of us, understand how to moderate, mitigate the emotional powerhouse events, the triggers. And in those triggers, we relive those same emotions. And so to build our resilience is to say, wait a minute, I don't need that group of emotions that causing that or that triggers me. I need these over here that enlighten me and move me forward. So I'm on the second page, and the HeartMath Institute was founded back just in the beginning of the 1990 period. And the founder, a guy named Doc Childrey, named the Institute intentionally, the heart representing the metaphorical but also the scientific heart. He joined heart and math because he wanted rigor and better understanding in research and applied science to use the double-blind study methods and strong scientific inquiry to develop a series of research-based reports and outcomes that could help educate people about building resilience and other such things. So this particular slide set was developed a few years ago. It says that more than 80 studies, and I know that there are well over 350 studies, either conducted entirely by the HeartMath Institute or co-conducted with others. They've won some awards, and I'll show you that at the end of this presentation. This is about stress reduction. This is about resilience, which leads to stress reduction. But what I love about it is it's a tool to understand what's going on in our body. Shelley touched on several of these points earlier, but this is a scientific means to see what's taking place in your body so that you can make determinations and decisions from that information to change. So on the third page, we have quite a few clients listed there, people like Stanford Graduate School of Business, GlaxoSmithKline, Kaiser Permanente, a number of people have used the HeartMath training. And what this means, and I'm a certified trainer, it means that I can come deliver an hour's presentation up to a four-hour or a day-long presentation from the technical information that they provide. It's just a deeper dive, a longer period programs. On the fourth page is a picture with the bending tree and the idea of replacing our resistance to the forces of life and to try to help us find the flow of that life. And so before I get too deep into this, I have a metaphor that I use with my clients regularly, and it's just as simple as can be, in that we are in the current of life. We are in that river. We are in that flow. However, we can be over in the eddy of that river, which actually works against the tide. It reverses us, and our energy can be fighting in such a way that we're reversing the energy or the flow of life. Our goal, my client's goal, is to be nearer that current or to be in the sweet spot of that current when you truly are moving through and with life. I know that metaphor has been used an awful lot, but think of it in terms of the energetic message that this HeartMath Institute has taught us, and which we'll learn about a little bit more today. Because energy flows through our body. As it flows through our electrical power lines at home, there are line losses. Some of that energy just squiggles out of that line, and sometimes it reverses. And when it does, it creates disease and upset thought processes and what have you. And our goal is to get that electricity of our own bodies moving in a current. I'm down on the sixth slide, and there's a picture of a heart in a blue slide. And I think this is really paramount. The heart has its own nervous system. And scientists who have been in and around the study for some time call that the heart brain. The decisions are being made at the heart level, irregardless of the brain's input. And the heart sends way more electrical impulses and signals to the brain than the brain sends to the heart, which sounds counterintuitive to most of our early scientific understandings. And these heart signals, these messages that are received, this current that I mentioned, especially affect the brain centers involved in strategic thinking, reaction times, and self-regulation, the prefrontal cortex. The energy flow, being in the current, delivers a high quantity of effective energy into those brain centers. But in the absence of that, in our fight or flight state, in our high cortical inhibition, energy draws away from the prefrontal cortex. And that's the place where strategic thinking, reaction times, and self-regulation take place. I'm on the seventh slide now, and there are two images, two graphs shown. The upper graph is note heart rate on the left. And so heart rate here in this graph is bouncing around quite a bit over time. But I term that graph with the red line discordant. It's not a clean wave. Now, this is what happens when we are under frustration, anxiety, worry, and irritation. So for just a couple of seconds now, I've got to go somewhat technical with you because you're looking at a graph of what? Well, it's not a graph of your heart rate. That's just indicative of where the heart rate is when this graph was being built. This is a graph of your heart rate variability. And I submit to you that the heart rate variability is the picture as to whether you're in the current of that river or you're fighting against it. And this red upper graph is someone currently fighting against this. It impairs their performance. They're reacting out of anger, fear, frustration, those emotions that inhibit cooperation and inhibit good, clear thinking. So if you think for just a second about a heartbeat model, think, for instance, I ask Dave and I say, hey, what's your resting heart rate? And Dave says, oh, my resting heart rate's 60. Well, okay, but that's an average. So think of that beat going across the flat line and then blipping every second. That would be a resting heart rate of 60 beats per minute. But nobody's heart beats regular beats per minute. All of us have very infinitesimal gaps. The delta between the last beat and the next beat and the next beat and the next beat might be separated by milliseconds. And that's what's been measured, and that's what the people at the Heart Math Institute have done an excellent job of. So the red graph is someone whose heart rate variability is getting quicker, quicker, slower, slower, quick, 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 slow, slow, and it's discordant. The lower graph, the blue line, is showing someone who's in more coherence. Let's call that energetic coherence. But that energetic coherence leads to better reaction times, more rational thought, ease of getting along with others. Those blue line, then, in the sine wave curve, and those who aren't looking at this presentation, this is a sine wave curve, your classic wave of consistency, your near consistency across the timing. And so this person's heart rate variability is swinging up, let's say, on three beats by increasing its speed, and then it's slowing by five or six or seven beats. Then it's speeding up, and then it's slowing down. But it's doing so in a coherent manner. It's doing so in the flow of the current and of the river. So heart rate variability is the basis for an awful lot of the Heart Math Institute studies. This next slide, slide 8, simply talks about different regions of the brain that are connected from this heart energy. And the incoherent heart energy can inhibit brain function. And the more coherent, the sine wave, HRV, heart rate variability, leads to greater coherence, leads to higher brain function, better reaction times, as tested by those 350 scientific-based tests that I told you about. So people like the Navy SEALs, people like some of the other military operatives, use this training of the Heart Math Institute to help their field operatives and office-level people. Hospitals use this technique in operating theaters to ask their operating teams to find this coherence. And when they do, they work better. And they have proven models of that working better. How do we get to that place? I'm on slide 9, and there's a great deal of published research in and around this whole arena of understanding that people work better together. First of all, they help themselves. Secondly, they work better in teams when they find their coherence, their heart rate coherence. Back to that slide I mentioned just two or three back, where we had a discordant red graph, but then we had the nice blue coherence. That's the same person. It's just at a different time for that person. Heart Math Institute needed to take, for the studies, the rigor of the studies that they have developed, they needed to have a platform of baseline of the same application of information to help understand in different people outcomes. And that baseline, there are four heart math techniques, but the principal one for a good deal of these tests is called the quick coherence technique. Now, I will grant you that this technique that I will walk you through real quickly here is very similar, perhaps, to those of you who practice yoga, those of you who meditate, those of you who take the time to pray and just try to put your mind elsewhere. But in this case, what we're asking our mind to do is to be quieted. Now, I also want you to know that this happens at high heart rates as well as low heart rates. We're not trying to lower the heart rate. We're just trying to build coherence in the rate and the pace. We're trying to get in the current rather than being in the eddy. So one of the techniques is called quick coherence. I use it for clients all the time just to try to bring some regulated thought and I guess a better way of being and a more coherent heart rate variability. But we start by asking the client to simply focus on their breath and become aware of, shift their focus to their awareness of their breath, follow the cadence and try to slow that if possible. But beyond that, place a focus on their heart. Think of both the metaphorical but also the beating organ. It beats almost 100,000 times a day. And by placing our focus on our heart, we then ask, what is it for which we might be grateful from today's events, from any time in our past, person, place, or thing? And place that thought of gratitude, that appreciation in the heart. Let that thought sit in the heart while you continue to breathe in through and around that heart. And normally that's about a 3-minute exercise, but I submit to you after you've done it for quite a little while, it can be 3 seconds or 30 seconds and be just as effective. But we have measured at the HeartMath Institute is the increased coherence by looking specifically at that heart rate variability curve. So we can see the data from that simple exercise and those who get used to practicing it. So I'm on slide 11. And 11 is a report of a study that was done on 5,692 people some time back. And the first survey asked those participants, and that's the bar on the left, how many of you are tired, anxious, and the various attributes that are shown in that slide. And then they were taught the HeartMath technique sometime in the ensuing weeks. And 6 weeks after they were taught, they were asked the same questions. And of those who found themselves particularly anxious or tired or what have you, they ended up with massive reductions in their own ability to manage those symptoms. I'm on page 8 and 9, I believe. No, 11 and 12, sorry. So, rapid heartbeat, arrhythmia, 8% of the people said they had that, but after being taught this method and understanding how heart rate variability acts, so I'm not just saying they were taught the meditative low right, that is the tool that is used, but they were taught what it is and how the HRV can be indicative as to how they're feeling and doing. 63% reduction. Depression, 42% reductions. Better sleep. All of these are outcomes of understanding, oh, this is what's tripping me up. And once you understand how our own bodies react, you have an opportunity to correct that through the simple exercise that I mentioned to you earlier. If you go all the way down to slide 16 out of 26, there's another test here that was done on 222 pharmacists. And the idea was, hey, if they were trained on this technique, they came to understand why and where their errors come when they're out of the current, out of the flow. And you see down there at the bottom of the slide, it says 40 to 71% reduction medication errors occurred there. I'm on slide 18 of 26. The whole point of this is improved both physical health, but certainly mental and emotional health. I think what Shelley was telling us about was a good deal of the emotional health and how our sympathetic and parasympathetic system can be dysregulated or affected by emotions, the reoccurrence, because we live those very emotions again when things crop up, adverse things or good things. I know they used to smoke or cook these cinnamon rolls in the shopping malls years ago. And I was allured to them, one, because they're sweet and lovely, but secondly, because that butter, that cinnamon, working with flour, reminded me of my grandmother. And I'd just be going down the mall with friends, and the next thing you know, my mind is in my grandmother's home site, because the smell connected me to that. All five of our senses can have us, cause us to relive emotions. Now, to conclude, I just want to go to page 23 and 24. You say, well, okay, that's somewhat technical. Yeah, it is. But it's really as simple as coming to understand when your heart rate variability is in the groove and in the flow, you get better coherence. You get better work performance yourself as well as that with others. I submit to you that's when the team is really firing on all pistons. The group is in the groove. And Shelley made the point earlier that it only takes one to affect change in others. And that's true and has been proven by the HeartMath Institute. that when one is in coherence, the opportunity for others to join that coherence exists. And so they've actually looked at those ratings. Now, how do they look at that? Well, these tools at the bottom of this presentation on page 24, where I went to, and sometimes I do this with clients, I just click into my iPhone, this little register, you put an ear clamp on there, and that little clamp is reading the beats per second, and it actually can understand the meniscal time between those heartbeats so that it can create that graph that we were looking at. And rather than having everything on that graph, the HeartMath tool has a series of a mandala in the center and a series of colors around the ring that can help show you when, by using this tool or this exercise, when you're in that discordant and irregular heart rate variability and when you can move toward that and when your body is moving toward that. All that to say, there's a ton of data that backs this research. The primary research is that which, to me, says, hey, we're in the flow or we're out of the flow. And we who take personal responsibility for our resilience have an opportunity to see that, explain that to others, and share that in a way that gives, I think, deeper meaning to creating a resilience for ourselves by using the simple tools of recalibration. And that doesn't matter whether you're in high heart rate, really difficult situation, or whether you're in a slow, restful mode. Heart rate variability is the coherence or lack of it is across all bandwidths of heart rate. So that's pretty much my presentation today, and I appreciate you each listening and look forward and appreciate the opportunity to do so, Dave.
Thank you so much, Ace. It was a privilege to have you do such a cohesive overview of that, and each of you have Ace's email as well as Shirley's in case you want to ask questions or for referrals or any kind of follow-up. So I know we're a bit over. Thank you all so much, and I welcome any input. If I can be of help in any way, please let me know. I'll send out a recording of this in case there's anything you want to review or for those who didn't attend. So thanks so much to both Shelley and Ace and to each of you for contributing and for all of your input throughout. I'll also send in the follow-up email the four meeting times it will have each quarter for 2020, so you can put this on your schedule ahead of time. Thanks so much, and please don't hesitate to contact me if there's anything at all. I appreciate it. Love being with you guys. Thanks so much.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you guys. Bye. Thanks, Dave. Mm-hmm.